The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has delivered the news that nobody wanted to hear. Temperatures are rising fast and time is running out. In its report in October 2018, the IPCC called for rapid, far-reaching and unprecedented changes. These demands have intensified, from the highest echelons of the United Nations to the hundreds of thousands of schoolchildren in 110 countries going on strike. There's also been wave after wave of increasingly belligerent civil disobedience and protest. With governments and corporations under pressure to take long overdue action, we speak to David Boyd, UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and the Environment, Jasper Toolings, General Counsel for Greenpeace, and Roberto Cadiz from the Commission on Human Rights of the Philippines. We begin with David Boyd, who says the impact of climate change on human rights will be underlined in his report to the UN General Assembly.
I'll be setting forth the obligations that states have in law to protect human rights from the impacts of climate change. I'll identify a bunch of good practices that have been put in place in countries around the world, and I'll set forth what I think will be some eyebrow-raising recommendations about what needs to be done in light of the scope and the scale of the crisis that we face. The reason this is essential is because climate change is already having huge impacts on human rights all around the world. As part of my role as the Special Rapporteur, I also do what are called country visits, and so I do two of these a year. And my first one was in December of 2018 to Fiji, and it was really quite devastating to witness the impacts that climate change is having on the people of Fiji. I visited one of the first communities in the world that had to be relocated because of the impacts of climate change, a small indigenous village called Vuni Dongoloa. And it was really heartbreaking to see the change in the people's quality of life as a result of that having to move from a beautiful oceanfront village to a kind of scraped off hillside 2 kilometers inland. So climate change is having brutal impacts on some of the poorest and most vulnerable people in the world today.
Boyd says governments and citizens need to act now and fast.
So it's absolutely essential that we take actions in the short term. And that's exactly what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said in its report late in 2018, that in order to successfully address the challenge of climate change, we need rapid, systemic, and transformative changes in all aspects of society. That's the world's leading scientists telling us in very clear terms that we can't just continue tinkering. We need to really make some substantial and significant changes in the way we live, the way we produce energy, the way we treat the world's forests, and the way we produce our food. 3 years after the Paris Agreement, and we're still seeing more money being invested in fossil fuels than renewable energy. That's absolutely the opposite of the direction that we must head in. We need states to step up to the plate and find ways of basically internalizing the costs of these emissions that have been borne by society and should really be borne by these companies. So, you know, mechanisms such as carbon taxes or a climate damages levy are the types of actions that states could and should be implementing at this point in time.
Strategic litigation has become an increasingly potent tool to engineer change. Jasper Toolings, General Counsel at Greenpeace, says the Urgenda Foundation's bid to prove the Dutch government has a legal duty to prevent climate change has created a blueprint for climate-based lawsuits worldwide.
The Urgenda case basically captured global attention, and for a good reason. It was the first successful climate case against a government brought by ordinary people with the support of an NGO. So it's about holding your government to account on what, on the obligations it took upon itself to protect the public and to protect the environment, to protect the climate. It's just about holding them to account to obligations that they had already signed on to. And most of our governments have signed on to these obligations or have made promises in other forms, but they're simply not living up to these obligations. And this comes at our expense and at the expense of future generations.
In the absence of strong enough government or legislative action on climate change, Toolings says courts are helping to fill the void.
And I think courts are acutely aware of the limitations of their role in the trias politica. And they have been very careful in delineating where their powers end and those of others start. For instance, in the Urgenda case, the court has held and has ordered the government to live up to its obligations on how it should meet those obligations. They are clearly communicating vessels, and the longer governments and corporations fail to live up to the obligations that rest on them, the more of a mandate is given to the courts. So this mandate is generated by the inaction of those that need to act. If they would take their responsibility, there would be no mandate, there would be no need, there would be no problem. For these cases to generate value is not dependent on a victorious outcome. It's in the journey because of the empowerment that's happening with for these community, the impact of communities. It's for the space that it creates for regulation, the signals it sends, the awareness that they raise. So all of those are benefits that are reaped all along the way. And you know, as with any major social change, it won't come overnight. It requires stamina, and it will require from our end and the communities enduring many losses in court. That's fine. That's calculated into the game. That's not the problem. As long as we're raising awareness and we're making progress, I just hope it's all sufficient and it's happening swiftly enough.
Boyd agrees that climate lawsuits are helping to shift government thinking on the climate crisis.
Their importance may actually be greater in the court of public opinion, where they have drawn so much attention to this issue with such authority and legitimacy that I think it's starting to turn the ship around in terms of convincing governments that they actually, not only do they have a legal and moral obligation, but it's in their political interests to accelerate the pace of climate action as well.
The Commission on Human Rights of the Philippines has been conducting a national inquiry into allegations that human-induced climate change has adversely affected the Filipino population. Commissioner Roberto Cadiz, who led the inquiry, says from the outset it was obvious that the scope of the inquiry was global.
The petition alleged that the big contributors to climate change were the big oil companies, no? The so-called carbon majors, and most of them are not present in the Philippines. So the sources or the contributors to climate change are global. We decided that the inquiry should be global because climate change is a global issue. And we, after studying the case and after looking at our mandate, we realized that we had advantages within our processes that are not available to courts that could allow us to conduct a global dialogue on this issue. Rather than go into the difficult process of trying to impose jurisdiction over them, we just said that this should be a dialogue, but it will be a substantive dialogue, which is allowed under our constitution in the mandate that was granted to our commission. It's a very broad mandate. It says to investigate all allegations of human rights violations on rights of the Filipino people. So instead of issuing subpoenas and summonses, we issued letters of invitation, mm-hmm. notices for them to participate. But we also said in our notices that with or without their participation, we were determined to continue with our inquiry.
Cadiz says this case and others have shown the growing nexus between human rights and climate change.
We said that human rights are integrated, they're indivisible, that one cannot discuss or consider civil political rights without also looking into economic, social, and cultural rights. Although the case filed before our commission is the very first case to have been accepted by a human rights commission where it is attempted to frame climate change as a human rights issue.
Cadiz and his team intend to publish their report in time for the next UN Climate Change Conference in Santiago, Chile. He hopes their findings will have a long-lasting impact.
If you look at the expertise behind our report, given the wealth of global experts, that's where the gravitas will come from. not from our power to impose, but on the strength of the evidence that we will be relying upon in the issuance of our report.
Tooling says the inquiry will raise tough questions worldwide about climate change accountability.
It could result in the first ever legal finding on corporate responsibility for the climate crisis, and also in doing so, lay the foundations for accountability in other forums. Mm-hmm. So I think the potential impact of a case like this goes well beyond its national borders.